Welcome to the Paddle Sports Lifestyle. I'm your host, Kim Peek. In our first season, I took on the MR340, a grueling 340-mile paddling race across the Missouri River. With just 4 months of intense training, I pushed my limits and discovered what it truly means to embrace the paddle sports lifestyle. Now, as I dive into season two, it's time to shift gears and tackle the burning questions that have been on your mind. I'll leave no stone unturned in my quest to equip you with the knowledge and confidence to take on the MR340 while we uncover the stories behind this epic endurance race. Join me for a journey filled with adventure, determination, and triumph. Welcome to another episode of Paddle Sports Lifestyle. My name is Kim Peek, and I'm your host. Today, I'm thrilled to have Laura Milby as my guest. You probably know Laura and her husband, Ryan, as the owners of Llama Racks. Laura is also an experienced kayaker and ground crew member and a vibrant fixture in the paddling community in Missouri and the Kansas City area. One thing I loved about talking with Laura is how she embodies the spirit of paddling. She's so friendly and enthusiastic, and you are just going to love this interview. But in addition to that, she makes the sport seem incredibly accessible to everyone. Whether you're a seasoned paddler or someone who's just curious about getting your feet wet, Laura's insights are sure to inspire you. Throughout our conversation, you'll notice a recurring theme about the paddling community. It's all about friendliness and willingness to help others learn the ropes. One thing I've loved about the MR340 community is everyone's willingness to help others get started and just how freely people share their knowledge. And Laura and Ryan play a part in fostering this welcoming atmosphere, which makes the sport not just an activity, but a way to connect with others, find friendships and connection, and appreciate the beauty we have along the Missouri River. Now, let's get to my interview with Laura Milby. Could you share a little bit just about your background and how you got started with paddling and the MR340?
Yeah, so my husband Ryan saw the race. We're in Kansas City, so he saw the race on the TV one year. Man, maybe in like, I want to say 2011 or 12, somewhere around there. And I know he called a friend and they signed up and then they didn't end up racing it. And then the next year, I think he signed up again. So we gave lots of donations to the race. So he signed up again and didn't race it. I don't remember what happened. I think he switched jobs or something. You know, it's life, right? So I think they actually bought a boat one of those years, a big green, giant, heavy canoe. And they thought, oh, we're going to do it. And then it didn't happen. So then we had our first kid in 2014. And I was due in June. So we had our kiddo on June 16th. And the race was supposed to be about 4 weeks later. So it was going to be very, it was, may have been 3 weeks later. So it was going to be very quick. So he signed up. This was the year. We knew we were going to do it. I would be on maternity leave. You know, we're not the smartest people sometimes. So I figure if you're going to deal with screaming baby, you can do it anywhere because you aren't going to sleep one way or another. So you might as well just not sleep on the river. So that year, the race got pushed to August for floods. I think we had really high water. And so they pushed it to August, which we were thankful for. It gave me some extra weeks to recover. And so that was the first year that I ground crewed. I have always ground crewed with kids, to put that disclaimer out there. So my ground crew experience is probably a little more stressful than your average person's, but I've always ground crewed with the kiddos. So he raced in 2014, 15, 16. In 16, I was pregnant with our second, and we had a two-year-old along. So that was fun. And then he took a year off and volunteered. And then in 2018, he and I raced together. So that was my first and only year racing the race. We had planned to come back and race in 2019, but his back needed surgery. So yeah, through recovery, we also had started our business, Llama Racks, and that was in 2018 as well. So we kind of used that as an opportunity. We had met all these amazing people with the community. We'd been around for a while. So we felt like if we couldn't race, we should contribute. And so we went and volunteered. We followed the race route several years in a row, just helping. Ryan's repaired tons of boats and rudders on the sideline. And we just tried to help out as much as possible. We'd go down, and my favorite spot's Waverly. So we always go to Waverly and pull boats out there because it's a crazy stop. Cheer people on, cheer out our friends. And then this last year, he raced in a 5-man. So we were back to ground crewing again. So yeah, that's my kind of my experience with it. It was fun to race. It's fun to ground crew. It's two very different things. So yeah, it's fun to be able to see it from both sides now, I think, having done both. But
and then as part of your story, you mentioned that you started Llama Racks. So for people who don't know, let's talk about what is Llama Racks and what inspired, was it you or Ryan or both of you to start that?
No, it was Ryan. So he's very mechanically inclined, has always been. He's amazing. So it kind of started on accident in a way. He had been making racks for friends and people and trying to come up with cool designs. And he wanted to solve the security issue with boats on cars, because it is a security problem to have them up there when you're traveling. So he just wanted to make it a little harder for them to be slid off your roof and stolen. So the slots in the racks was kind of the driving force. It's the final design we got to. He kind of made stops along the way, but that's what inspired it, I guess. And then he made some extra one day, and people were like, you know, hold me one, I'm mailing you money. And we only have like 5. And so it just kind of like accidentally started like, hey, I think there might be a demand here. And you know, he's got an engineering mind, and it's always going with how to make it better and smoother and more usable. So, you know, that's how the business started. It was really fast and kind of out of nowhere. And it's been a big blessing to us just to be able to have a business that I help with the social media side of it. He does pretty much everything. So, you know, obviously, it's helped us to get to know so many cool people and, you know, be able to have a business that can encourage people to come do the race, come do any race, just get fit, do something outdoors and be happy. We make vehicle racks for cars, for vehicles to carry your kayaks, canoes, SUPs, pretty much anything. We've got lots of custom stuff that we've done for people we've done a pole vaulting pole carrier. We've done custom pedal drives for people to carry their custom pedal drives. You know, so we've done trailers and all kinds of crazy stuff. So we kind of have what we generally do. And then there's kind of this other side to it. And then we also work with some beach outfitters, and we're partners with John McCoy and Andrew. And we sell sellers and kayaks, plastic boats, all kinds of recreational items through Sun Beach. So I'm trying to think what I'm missing and we also do rudders. So we do the RR rudders. So Ryan Slivos is a good friend of ours. Ryan and Ryan get together and talk rudders. So that kind of came up as something that they wanted to work on together to kind of expedite the process and, you know, streamline it with materials that we do. So the rudders have been a thing that we've added through the years. We do garage storage. Gosh, I'm probably missing.
Oh, wow.
It's on our website. I don't know. Lots of stuff.
That's a lot. That's awesome. Okay, so digging into this ground crew stuff, do you have any systems or ideas on if somebody has never ground crewed before, what is your best tip for getting prepared?
Well, I was humbled this year to have done this for many years and ground crew with a 5-man, because you have so many people who've done this for so many years. I mean, you know, the ladies that I was with were just phenomenal. They know 100% more about this than I do, and they're way better at it. I mean, I'm definitely the slacker in the group. But so how to get prepared? First of all, I think it's important to know that the paddlers have a race on the river, and it's a completely different race than what the ground crew is doing. So ground crew, you have like, it's so cool because you're not running the marathon, but you have this whole cool race experience without, you know, that aspect of it. So I think to get prepared is, that's a big tale. I think if I was starting out, I would probably sift through. There's lots of material out there about ground crew. But I think that I would probably, you know, start with some of like the Inmore 340 paddler. Chris Lukey has lots of really good videos that have countless information for ground crew as well. But I think the biggest thing is I would talk with my paddler about what their goals are. Are they racing a race that they want to go really fast, or are they surviving? Because there's the middle of the pack that kind of they're doing both, right? Maybe it's their second year and they want to just go a little faster than last year. It seems that so when you talk to your paddler about that, it kind of leads you to what the next steps are. So if you have a paddler at the front of the pack that's going to race it hard and they want to place, they want to be done in whatever, 40 hours, 35, they want to go for 50, do their sub 50, whatever it is. If they're trying to go fast, it is a different ground crew race for the ground crew than going slower or really slow, you know. And really slow is not bad. Finishing the race and that being your goal is awesome. I mean, that was our first year too. Like, just survive, right? I had a 9-week old at that point. We were like, I don't care, just please don't drown. So, but I think to get started, it would be that first conversation of what's the goal? Like, what are we doing here? If you're going fast, the obvious first steps are going to be like, what are the stops going to look like and where? And mapping that out. Because for ground crew, that tells you, are you stopping at all the places? Are you stopping at 3 places? You know, are you only stopping at checkpoints because you're going to wave them by and text them in for your ground crew responsibilities? What does that plan look like? Because that's going to tell you initially how much time you're going to spend on the actual riverbank. Because if you're stopping at tons of ramps, you know, that's going to take a lot of time. If you're trying to go very fast, you probably don't want to do that. So a lot of people that are trying to book it through will go, I want to stop at these 4 channel side stops every 30 to 40 miles or whatever that plan is. If your paddler is going middle of the pack, they may be stopping to sleep, which your people that are racing hard are most likely not.
Right.
A stop and sleep for any period of time. So what's the sleeping accommodations? How often are we pulling the boat out of the water? You know, you can stop without stopping. Is there any of those stops we're going to try? Do I pull my boat in, get handed things, and then go on my way? Or are we pulling the boat out? I'm coming up to the car. I want to find that thing in that tub that has all my junk in it. And I'm not worried about hurrying back onto the water. You know, if you're trying to survive the race, your stops will be limited because you maybe not be paddling as fast, or you might have less time on the bank. So for ground crew, all of that paddler information kind of frames up what you're looking at. So for getting started, know the plan, have an idea of when you're going to stop, what's going to happen at those stops. So are we pulling the boat out? Is it staying in? Know that there's going to be a plan B, C, D, E, F.
Especially sure, like last year, everything changed.
I'm sure lots of people figured that out quickly. So what's the plan if plan A doesn't work? And how are we going to communicate that plan? Because once your paddler is back on the river, it's typically a lot of radio silent. Although this year, you know, I was with people that were talking to their paddler frequently. Maybe they had an earbud in or they had stuff. I'm not used to that. We're pretty radio silent when we're out there. What else? I would probably know how I'm going to navigate Missouri. So if you're not from here, or even if you are, I know I've told lots of people I was really, really dumb my first year. I didn't know which way the river went out of Kansas City. Like I knew, but then like when you get on the road and you're like, which way do we go?
So how do I get there?
I don't know. I was very, very sleep deprived already from having a kiddo. So that didn't help anything, but we didn't have that plan together really just because we didn't. So how am I navigating? Do I have a GPS? Am I saving? Like I always recommend people to save offline maps on their phone. Because if you save the state of Missouri offline, you can navigate to anywhere without cell signal. So that is huge, especially when you're at those ramps and places where you can't get signal. So I generally save a Google dot on the map and name it and then save an offline version. And I think once I knew how I was going to navigate, what's the plan, all of those things, then I would start filling in all the little pieces that fall into that. So what are they eating? What are they drinking? How often are we swapping out? Do they need extra sunscreen at every stop, or do they have one in the boat? You know, just all of the other kind of copious amounts of details, I think, that overwhelm everybody as they're starting. So that's my initial thought, how you would get started. I'm sure I'm missing tons of things, but.
And then talk a little bit about communication on the river when you do, because there's a lot of dead spots. I mean, for me, when the race got called off last year, yeah. I was in a section where my phone didn't work at all. And there's people around us yelling, hey, check your text. I'm like, okay, well, mine doesn't work. And so it's like, how do you communicate? What is the trick?
I don't think there are tricks. I think in that regard, that's, and maybe one of the only people saying this, I think that that's kind of what makes the race cool, because there is that nuance. For me, it was a way to unplug and go, right? And yes, in a safety situation, how do we get notified? There is the ability to call. You're right. There's dead spots. There's times when your text may not come through. I mean, we certainly experience that at times. Spot trackers help the ground crew see the paddler. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't help the paddler communicate to ground crew. Like you said, people yelling things onto the river. I don't think a lot of people have ever been on the river that are beside the river. It's because once you've paddled on the river, you know how hard it is to hear and see literally anything but river or trees, right? People think they're really big on the shore when they're waving, and I'm guilty of it too. I still remember a famous time my husband was coming into Jeff City with we had all the torches, and there was a bonfire, and it's like, how do you not see us? And he's like, I have no idea. So I don't think there is a trick. I think if it's a situation where you think somebody might be yelling, check your text, and your text isn't working, I certainly would at that point, you know, pull over and see if I can get closer or get to the next ramp and ask somebody if there's paddlers around you, asking them if they've heard anything, or can you call somebody for me because my phone's not working. I think, I don't know, we're not spot people, so I don't have a lot of information about spot, but I don't know if there's ability to communicate back and forth at all there. But
so I had a spot tracker on, yeah. But it only has like buttons that you have pre-programmed. So that doesn't really, do communication, but my crew at least knew where I was. But right. I was thinking about buying one of the Garmin products and paying for that, whatever the satellite thing is called, just for like a couple of months this summer, because you can turn it off and on. Because I'm like, I just want to, for safety, I want my people to be able to talk to me.
Yeah, I think knowing what your plan is before you get out there too. And that was kind of one of the things I was thinking about today when I knew we were going to chat. You know, last year caught a lot of people off guard. I think knowing, like, if you know where your paddler is, do you guys have a meet point? You know what the next ramp is probably that they're going to stop at.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when they never left? Like, did you see them leave the ramp before?
Right.
If some ground crew don't, or maybe the paddler stopped at a different ramp, I think it becomes really tricky. And I wish there was a secret, but I don't think there is. I mean, when we raced before, and I know cell signal changes, but we've always done a 1 hour out call because we didn't do spot. So we did a phone call. So if I know I have an hour left on the river, I call ground crew. We personally have never had problem reaching. But we probably just got lucky, right? I mean, that's kind of how it feels sometimes with the cell service out there. But we've had enough to make a phone call. We did pre-program multiple phones in multiple carriers. So like if I was ground crewing with two other people and I have whatever, T-Mobile, and they have, I don't even know what the cell carriers are, you know, Verizon or whatever. They have somebody else, right? Make sure that there's people on the boat that have multiple phone numbers to call for multiple carriers, because sometimes, like, you know, he may be having service on the river and my same carrier doesn't, right? But he can get a hold of somebody else. So that's kind of what we've done. And really that's just going with that contingency plan of A, B, C, D, E, like, what are we going to do when A doesn't work? But that's my thought. I think part of the adventure of the river, unfortunately and fortunately, is that you're out in the middle of nowhere and it is a little bit of survival if something happens. I mean, there's lots of race stories from people about getting caught in storms and, you know, all kinds of harrowing situations, and you're kind of left to your own devices. So that's something the paddlers have to kind of think through on their side, as well as ground crew.
Have you always been a front of the pack ground crew, or have you ever?
No. So I know I was thinking today, I'm a horrible wife, apparently, because I can't remember his first year time, but he finished. We were out on the river, I know for sure, two solid nights. So we would have been coming in on Tuesday, Wednesday. Yeah, we would have been coming in third day. I think he came in around 8 or 9 p.m., somewhere around there. So I've never done the fourth day, but I've done a solid 3 days out. So middle of the pack, I guess, is what you would call that. So yeah, I mean, I've done the full 3 days. There's a reason why I feel like for both paddlers and ground crew, the saying of suffer fast is pertinent, because you're going to suffer. Like, the longer you're out there on both sides, you're going to suffer. If you're ground crew, you're just going to be hot and tired and smelly probably the longer you're out. And it kind of goes the same for the paddlers. The longer you pull the race on, you're suffering longer. And we've always said and admired anybody who's out there, you know, longer is hurting a lot more than anybody that's finishing quickly. It speaks to their grit and determination, I will say that. Mm-hmm. So yes, I definitely have. Our first 2 years really were, and I think the second year was shorter, but it wasn't quite as long, but I think he was just sub 50 this second year. I could be wrong. But we also saw, like, the first year, especially as ground crew, he spent 13 hours on shore the first year, which for some people, they might go, wow, 13's not bad, right? But it adds up, you know, mm-hmm. Any shore time adds up as you go. And for our ground crew the second year, the big thing was, we're going to keep these stops to 10 minutes. And now how he races, that feels long to me, because I don't let them get out of the boat much. So like with the 5-man, I don't know, you know, there was some videos going around of our stops, but like, and with Joe Meehan's boat too, the ladies were awesome on that boat, just throwing stuff in and send them on their way. Like, don't get out of the boat. You don't need to touch ground. You're just fine, you know? So 10 minutes now, where back then it felt like really quick, it's progressed to like, go on, go. The year we raced, we didn't get out of the boat. I mean, I touched dry ground twice, I think, in the entire thing. So yeah, I've done the ground crew that takes longer. There's more logistics with that, because you're going off of less sleep. But you also have to keep in mind, when you're ground crewing for a middle of the pack racer, or a racer that's going to take, you know, somewhere up to like 70 plus hours, you're going to have more time in between stops.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I say maybe, because sometimes those people like to stop more. So you might have more frequented ramps, because it takes them longer to get mm-hmm. to each place, and you don't want them to run out of water, you know, supplies. So, but typically you're going to have a little bit more time to breathe and to take a rest and sleep in your car or whatever, you know, wherever, to recuperate, because you're going to be out there a lot longer than somebody who's flying, just going. So, and the commitment at the stop is longer too, right? Because those racers are most likely pulling a boat out and coming up the ramp. And now you're dealing with them for the next however long. I said dealing with them. You can tell I ground crew for my husband. But you're with them for a longer period of time. So it makes the logistics very different than a ground crew that's going very quickly. I hope that makes sense. But
yeah. So what do you use? Maybe you've never been in this situation, but what do you use as your rule of thumb as the ground crew person who is supposed to be the one that has their eyes on what's going on and is the one that's truly mentally with it? What is your rule of thumb for telling your paddler, yeah, you can keep going, or no, we're going to pull out and you're going to sleep now?
Yeah,
that's going to be done.
Right. That one's really hard. I think that most of us assume too that you're ground crewing for somebody that you know, but there's a lot of people that ground crew for somebody that they just met, or that they're volunteering to ground crew for, or maybe they know them, but not that well. Mm-hmm. So it's a tricky question. And I think also remember that you may be the one that's supposed to have your head on straight, but I guarantee you get to like the middle of day two and you're heading into the second night, you're getting foggy too. I mean, in some capacity. So what's my rule of thumb? I mean, I think for me, knowing that paddlers are going to look exhausted and looking exhausted and not being able to get out of your boat to me are not indications of somebody not going on. Having been a paddler on this race, I could not walk half of the time. Like getting out of the boat to stay in the water for 2 seconds and jump back in was very difficult. Your legs are, if you're paddling hard enough, you know, you're pushing the leg drive and your legs are exhausted. Even if you're not like driving, honestly, just sitting in a boat puts you in a state that your legs do not work. So I don't think anybody needs to be concerned. Typically, if somebody looks like, you know, and they can't get out of their boat, like they just seem tired, or I think a little belligerence is probably okay too. Like you've paddled, you know, like when you pull into a ramp, it feels like you're on a different planet, especially mm-hmm. if it's nighttime, because you just come into a ramp that you could barely tell what it was, right? Like you're seeing all kinds of crazy things. And like, I thought Klondike was like a caterpillar or something. We couldn't figure out what these humps were. And, you know, and I've been to that ramp a million times as ground crew. I know what it looks like down at the bottom of the ramp. But as a paddler with no sleep at a certain point, coming into a ramp, you are typically a little, what are we doing? Like things are moving quickly. There's lights that you haven't been around lights. So I think what I like to watch for is how crazy are they acting or how sluggish. And I think you know how much water they're drinking because you've been managing that. You know, like we always pulled out trash and paid attention when we swapped food bags. I pulled this food bag last time and there was nothing out of it.
Mm-hmm.
The time with ground crew to know what you put into the boat and take out is really important. How much liquids are they drinking? And then how alert are they acting as well? And then if you don't know your paddler that well, have that conversation. Like, at what point am I concerned about you? Do you tend to, when you get overextenuated, are you dizzy? Do you slur your speech? Or what happens typically to you when you show signs? And I think some of it's just gut, right? I mean, there were stories where the guy that was on shore sitting in his boat paddling, thinking he was in the water, that guy should not go back out on the water. Okay. I mean, I've seen lots of people that should not go back on the water, but usually ground crew is catching that. And I think if in doubt, take your paddler up, give them a big old sandwich or hamburger, whatever their approved food is for the race, and assess the situation in 10 minutes. And I think there's a lot of ground crew that means really well, but they jump the gun and say, oh, no, you shouldn't go back up. Or the paddler comes off and is like, I mean, Ryan sat in a chair at Herman 1 year. I hate racing. I don't know why I do this. This is the worst thing ever. I'm never doing this again. You know, and I was like, okay, right? Like, it's all bull crap. But I think take a minute, take an hour. I mean, I think people forget that if you're middle of the pack and you come off for an hour that you didn't expect, like you don't have to be down and out. You can get back in and flow for the rest of the thing and be there depending on the speed, whatever. Yeah, there's details. But
and how bad the storms are that day.
Right. I mean, just take a hot minute to figure it out and let your ground crew assess. I mean, it is an adventure race. There's a reason why it's hard. It pushes you to the limits. But I think having that time to stop and assess and really decide, is this a good decision to stop or not? And you may stop for an hour thinking you're going to stop and then be like, I feel that in an hour. And sometimes putting them back on, if you're not sure, you're like, they're okay. Put them back on and assess again at the next boat ramp, right? And then you're going to tell, like, were they just tired? And now they've got some food in them and they're new. Or they've gotten worse and it's tough, right? Or you can wait and send them, like, there's all kinds of options. But if somebody else is leaving the ramp and they're going to go paddle with them, say, hey, why don't you guys stick together? It's nighttime. Why don't you guys stick together? Also, my paddler is feeling a little, you know, so keep an eye out. like it's a community. So I think working together, I certainly wouldn't send anybody back onto the water that you didn't feel comfortable, because you don't want something to happen on the water and it can be very serious. So I do think there's exercise caution, but I think you just have to find, are they whining? Are they just really sleepy? Or is it a more serious situation?
Yeah. So what about morale? Like when your paddler is, oh, I don't want to do this. I can't do this. I'm not going back out. But you know that this is their absolute goal. And like, they will be so mad at themselves if they quit because they didn't need to. So how do you get your paddler's morale up? And then also as the ground crew, how do you stay up and energized?
I'm a terrible person to ask the question to you. But I'm kind of like, you got yourself into this, get yourself back out there, right? Like at some point. So I think my best suggestion for that as a paddler is take ownership. The paddler needs to take ownership of their own morale first and foremost. Ryan and I had a rule in the boat that we will never sit there and complain. That was not an attitude that was allowed in our boat. So when we would paddle, yes, every once in a while you'd be like, oh my gosh, are we there yet? Like, there's moments. But I think overall, then we would tell a funny joke or sing a song or just make light of it. And it was our responsibility to keep that morale up. So I think this age old thing of like the ground crew needs to pep them up. Yes, that's great. But the first and foremost, the paddler needs to take control. I think as a ground crew support, though, if you want to pep up your paddler, I mean, there's lots of options there. If it's very hot outside, a well-placed ice sock in their lap is like, it's the best. It cools you off. It gives you just a boost. It could wake you up if it's bright and sunny and you're kind of starting to do the eyelid drop, an ice sock or a special cold drink, maybe that they haven't had yet. So for me, it was like a real sugar Pepsi and I just, and peanut M&Ms. That was my morale booster, right? So for me, that was like, okay, I got them. I'm good. So, you know, some people like to surprise their paddler with something they know that they like, but they didn't realize the ground crew had like a special sandwich or whatever it is. Be careful with that. I'm just going to put my disclaimer. If you haven't practiced with food, certain foods, it can hit the stomach very wrong and it can end a race. So be very careful. Don't start blaming your ground crew because they handed you in my case, it was a Casey's pizza at one point that almost ended. You could surprise them with something. The ice sock's really good. I know like Ellen Robinette always preached about fresh fruit, just like, hey, here's some fresh fruit. Or there's people that like to surprise them with an iced coffee or whatever, whatever it is. The paddler can turn it down. But I think having that offering is really nice too. And then keeping yourself as ground crew pepped up. I never really had a problem with that. Even when I was really tired or really grumpy, I think it doesn't get much better than to be out in the outdoors and you're around all these really cool people. I mean, the paddling community is one of a kind. Mm-hmm. And I had somebody a while back say that they didn't get that community feel. And I felt really sad when they said that. So I hope we're not losing that with this race. I don't think we are. I think we have so many awesome people that are here every year that really want to make it feel like a family and really cohesive. So I'd say if you're not feeling that, then go out there and make it. Right? I mean, go meet people. Part of the reason we know so many people, I'll walk up and just start talking to people. Paddler, where are you from? Right? So I think for a morale boost, it's just to know that you're part of this adventure in a very big way. And it's so cool. And you're not at work or you're not, you know, doing something that's horrible. And for me, it was just finding happiness and joy with people around us that were working on something maybe that they've trained for forever. And it's a life accomplishment, and, you know, or somebody who's, you know, it's their therapy this year to, you know, maybe they lost a parent or something, you know, it's their push through to accomplish this really cool thing. And for me, that's so poetic and I get really nerdy about it. But I think from a ground crew perspective, it's for me, that's what kept me like really happy and just cheering other racers on and helping people. Like there'll be people that would pull in that were non-supported that we'd go grab water for. I mean, how does that not make somebody happy? I think it's great.
Yeah. I mean, I love all those examples.
For me, it's not hard. I really enjoy being out there. I mean, yeah, it's stressful and you're tired and all that, but it's just such a cool experience. And my favorite day of the week, I'll tell you, every year since I started this is pulling boats in at the finish line on Thursday night. I always try to get out and volunteer to do that. And it's the coolest thing. So if you need a morale boost, go volunteer at the finish line because it's the coolest thing. Seeing people finish a race is just, it's so inspiring. It's so great.
Oh, I know that I will be bawling this year since I only got halfway because of the rain.
Yeah.
Last year was my first year. So I know when I get there, I'm going to be like, oh my gosh, we finally did this.
Oh, so can I put my ground crew plug out for you about the finish line? Are you ready for this? Primo ground crew suggestion. When you're going to the finish line and you know your paddler is going to come in, do not go to the hotel and get all pretty and put on your white jeans and your white tennis shoes and then come down to the finish line. Because what happens is everybody shows up at the finish line, and we didn't know our first year either. So I'm just putting this out there for the newbies. When you come in at the finish line, ground crew, you are not done. You need to get the boat out of the water and take it up the hill because the volunteers there, one of which is me, every year yelling at me, like, up, get this boat. We do carry a ton of boats out. So it's really helpful when ground crew can help pull a boat up, especially when you talk about middle of the pack people or end of the pack. You've got very heavy boats full of lots of gear. And it is exhausting work. And I watched Kate Mansker and many other volunteers year after year pull hundreds of boats out of the water, especially because at night, I know I always volunteer at night. I mean, I guess it probably is like this during the day a little bit too, but they always finish in packs. And so, especially at night, people don't want to be alone finishing. Yeah. So they buddy up with like two or three other boats. And it takes a lot of effort to get those boats in and carry them all up. So ground crew's job is not over until after that. Then go party, go get pretty, go get, you know, go smell good. But I always make fun of the white tennis shoes showing up at the finish line. I'm like, you better go change your shoes. Like,
oh, wow, it's funny. Oh, I had another question. Oh, I saw a lot of debate about this one last year, too.
Uh-oh.
Whose responsibility is it? Now, this is different for you because you're married. But responsibility is it to pack the gear?
Oh, this is not different because I'm married. I will say this too. It is 100% not different. And I only know this because I've learned this the hard way the first year. Oh, don't get me started. It is ground. So if you are volunteering to ground crew for somebody you don't know, so if it is a different situation, it's not your spouse or whatever, let them pack the car to Cop Point. But then the ground crew and the paddler need to spend time going through the car. You need to know where everything is. And the problem is if that paddler packs it and you don't know where something is, or they call like one of the years, gosh, I'm trying to remember why we needed it. We needed something out of the bin. He needed some thingamajig that he packed and it was in the second bin on the right. I mean, we had half of our garage in the car and I had no idea where anything was. So to me, ground crew, if you're not going to pack it, you should pull things out, pull everything out, and repack it with your paddler so that you know what's in everything and where it's all stored and what it all means. Because they're thinking in their head, I mean, all you're doing, you know, when you're paddling, all you have to do is think about, oh, this spot on my hand hurts. I wish I had that one little foam thing that's in that bin that I packed. And it looks like nothing to a normal person, but to me, it looks like this thingamajig. And what I mean, as ground crew, you're going to spend an hour trying to find this little foam thing that it looks like a piece of trash, right? And it's going to save the paddlers. So ground crew packs the car. Ground crew needs to know what's in it. They need to know everything going on. And if you're not driving your own car as ground crew, like if you're driving the paddler's car, you need to know everything about that car. Where is the spare tire? Is there a lock for the gas tank? Right? Because lots of examples of flat tires or people getting stuck, or where's the insurance information? Where's the things? Because you're driving across the state. So there is opportunity for things to go wrong. So I would just say, have a conversation. So maybe a little different because I'm married, because it's also my vehicle. But I think, you know, it's a good conversation to have, is where's the stuff? Where is everything? And how does the car work? You know, all the things. Just know everything.
And so this last, I think it's probably my last question, but because I'm me and I'm so excited about this race, I keep asking this question. And I'm just curious, like, what are your opinions on how we get more women involved? I know that the number of women has been growing, and there's a good number of women signed up for this year. But do you have any thoughts about how to get more women involved in this?
Well, gosh, that's a loaded question. So I think for me, I'm spoiled in this regard because Ryan is very good at encouraging me. Well, I think the encouragement to try and fail for me as a woman is huge. So if I was a woman looking into this race going, is it something that I could do or is it feasible for me to do? I think the encouragement through the local paddling groups for me is number one. So having groups, like we're spoiled with the Shawnee Mission 5K, the Hump Day 5K that goes on, but there's Creep Core and there's all kinds of other, Jim Brutton has one out in, you know, Tennessee. There's all kinds of cool paddling races that go on each week. And typically, and I hope for this, that these groups are all like this. I know quite a few people from both of them, but the encouraging environment to come, to try boats, to ask questions, to have people that will, you know, work through things with you if you have concerns or you have questions about boat setup or accessibility of being a woman and being out on the river by yourself. A lot of times those relationships that form through those paddling groups can help you find somebody that might take you out on the river for the first time. So I think as a woman going out with somebody that can be trusted, that knows how to navigate the river and talk about safety items and things like that, feel like that for me is really good. I think when you know something's accessible and you know that people aren't going to be laughing at you and it's not a man-only thing, which I really don't feel like this race is, like you said, the women's numbers are growing. I think just having the ability to try and to go out and have support and have people around you that are going to cheer you on. You don't have to win the race. Go to these paddling races, these 5Ks and 7Ks. You're racing yourself. And there's people there that will help you with your technique if you want pointers because you're looking at something like the 340. I think those groups are really great for that. I know that we've always had really good experiences. And I know that a lot of the people that run those races are really friendly. And you don't have to be a fast racer. I mean, if you're a woman looking at this race, you don't have to be fast. You don't have to be an ultimate athlete. Honestly, I know my husband says this a lot, that women would tend to have a higher pain tolerance and have a better mental ability at times with this race. And I know for me, I was really intimidated as a woman to do this, but not because I'm a woman, I guess, because I'm terrified of water.
Oh, wow.
People that, because I feel like I get judged real quick, but I don't, the Missouri is it's an intimidating river and there's a lot on the river. There's the bridge pilings and the barges and all the things and the buoys that are going to eat you in the middle of the night and just all the things. So for me, that part was really scary. And I still remember my first time on the river doing a shootout race back in 18. And it was like the first time I could convince myself to try it. But I think going on the river with somebody who understands it and can help guide and can help, you know, talk you through what's happening and here's how we're going to keep ourselves safe. And if something would happen, here's what we're going to do. I feel like that was really helpful for me to feel like it's, and I will say this too, woman or not, when you get to the start of the race and you start going, for me, it was a very anxious event. There's people all around you and whatever. But by the time we were ending day one, it felt like I had been on the river my whole life. Like it felt like home and it felt calming. And I didn't have that same anxiety that I did when we started. But I guess for me, it's just always having a supporting community and people willing to help beginners. And I do feel like our community has done a great job of giving out tons. I mean, you can't find this much information about other races. This race, people will give you every secret they have. Nobody is holding back how to go win this race. You could walk up to any person that's won it or came close and they will tell you whatever you want to know. So it's not a race where they're trying to hide or conceal ability to win or to do well. I feel like that's what makes our community really unique and really wonderful. Is it's a united cheering. And I think that's too, when the last paddle comes in at the finish line and everybody stops to cheer them in. Oh my gosh, like tears. And you didn't get to experience that last year, but it's beautiful. So typically, I know one of the paddlers was finishing during the awards ceremony a couple years ago. It was a friend of ours, and he was coming in and everybody stopped and went to the river to cheer him in. And it was just, it's just the best thing ever. I mean, that it takes to finish the race at that many hours. It's incredible. And I think everybody was just in awe. So I think just knowing that the community is wonderful helps, I feel like would help most women know that they're not going to be judged. This is not an elite thing where everybody's looking at you like you're no good or you don't know what you're doing. Like, I've never got that feeling from people. I think you could go up to anybody and they'll give you every secret they have. I know we do. I mean, we install tons of racks.
Right.
New paddlers coming into the race. And it's our favorite thing is, I know I certainly love coming out and meeting everybody. And then we try to watch. We meet lots of people. That's their first year, or maybe they did it the year before and they came and got a rack for their second year, whatever. But they bought a new boat that they want to go faster. It's so fun to sit and talk about the race and just what are their concerns. And we had a whole ground crew here like a month ago that came down from, I don't know where they drove in from, I don't remember, but and they sat and had lunch on our lawn and just we talked about ground crew and just everything. So I think knowing that you have a cool community around that will just care for you and you can ask questions too and you can message if you have questions, I think that's really neat. I think that that's the most welcoming for anybody, male or female, and no matter what age too. I mean, we get lots of people that have never done anything like this and they're 60 years old and they're going to try it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the guy that was here a few weeks ago might be the oldest racer this year. I'm not sure yet. I'll have to look. But I mean, it's incredible. It's such a neat community for anybody. So that's my best take on that. I think that with anything, if you feel like you can do it and you feel like you can get prepared to do it, then you can set your mind to do it and have it be accessible to anybody and people like you. You're a woman. You're coming back for your second year. Go finish it and then tell all your women friends.
Yeah.
Right? How empowered you feel and how, you know, it was something that you had to work through and push hard and stretch your limits. Right? And you can't get that feeling from too many activities. There's a lot of time out there to think and a lot of time to really like own who you are. And I think that that's really cool to empower people and especially women. So, yeah. That's nice.
We have, in my group that I train with, we have 4 women and 3 men. So we outnumber them, which is kind of cool.
We should always outnumber.
I think one of the coolest things about doing these interviews so far is listening to the enthusiasm from people who have been around it for a long time like you and just continually having that, this is a community, this is supportive, we all work together. That reinforced has been really good for me because I had an unconventional way of starting last year, but I just feel like I really got off on the wrong foot and I had people telling me the entire summer that I couldn't do it.
What? No way. Yeah,
I just think I was in with a bad group of people and just surrounded by some of the wrong people who were constantly telling me I couldn't do it. And so I love hearing from people who are way more experienced, you know, that no, that's not how it's supposed to be. We're all supposed to be supportive and this is a great community.
I think if in life if you would be surrounded by somebody that was saying you couldn't do things in general, then that's maybe not the right people.
Yeah.
That's what I would tell my kids.
Yep.
So I think, and you know, the race has grown exponentially since we came into the picture in 2000. We've watched it become massive. Which is not a bad thing, but we all have to remember that, you know, if we want the good charity of the race to feel like it's continuing on, we all have a part to play in that. And we have to be kind and treat each other, you know, with respect and with encouragement and love. And I feel like that from a ground crew's perspective, for me, was kind of like where the ground crew's role comes into when you're sitting at a ramp and you see somebody that's struggling or somebody that needs help or just being a part of each other's stories, I think is where you find the beauty in it. So I hope that nobody tells that you can't do it. I think, you know, we can all kind of do anything we put our minds to. We've just gotta buckle down and do it. So
I agree. Well, thank you so much for spending. I did not intend on taking this much of your time, but thank you so much for talking to me for so long about this.
Well, when you need the actual good information, go call all the other ground crews, because I've done it wrong a million ways. But I think it's such a cool race, and you can't beat it. You can't beat those sunsets on the river and sitting with friends and talking, and just, it's so good. It's a good place to be.
Thank you for listening, my friend. I know that within you lies a spirit of adventure, a hunger for new experiences, and a thirst for life that's anything but ordinary. It's time to unleash that inner explorer, to let go of any doubts or hesitations, and take that leap of faith. Do me a favor, connect with Paddle Sports Lifestyle on Instagram, share this podcast with a friend, visit the Paddle Sports Lifestyle store on Etsy, and let's make plans for an epic meetup on the water.